We're here with Joyce Martyr. She's here with some tips on how we as parents can make sure we're raising critical thinkers, mainly for parents, for preteens, early teens, but I imagine it'll be helpful for many parents. Joyce is a psychotherapist, a writer. She's the president of the Illinois Counseling Association. Joyce, you're also the founder and CEO of Urban Balance. Tell us a little bit about what Urban Balance is first.
Urban Balance is an insurance-friendly counseling practice with 8 locations in the Chicago area, 4 in the city and 4 in the suburbs, and we provide individual couples and family therapy.
And if somebody wanted to find you guys, what would be the easiest way?
Our website is urbanbalance.com.
Okay, well, we're here obviously to talk about how we can make sure we're raising critical thinkers. Let's talk about how to help our kids develop those skills. Obviously, encouraging questions is a good way to nurture critical thinking. But what if, and I'm a parent, I've experienced this with one of my own kids. I have 3 kids. What if your child's natural response, which seems to be one of my child's natural responses to nearly every question, is, I don't care. How can a parent make strides with a child who seems to have no opinion about most things?
Yes, that can be really frustrating for a parent when they say, I don't care, or they're unresponsive, and they kind of have a wall up. And it can ruffle our own feathers, so we need to remember that this is normal for them developmentally and to practice some compassion and a little detachment. Try and ask open-ended questions rather than direct questions. For example, if you're talking about marijuana, you could say, what are your thoughts about legalizing marijuana? Rather than something leading or direct, like, don't you think marijuana might cause other problems? Avoid trying to steer the conversation where you want to go. You really want to provide a safe and non-judgmental, supportive environment and allow them space to share their opinions. You want to provide them opportunity to respond without judgment or correction or interruption. And sometimes it's easier to direct the conversation about others rather than themselves. It makes them less defensive and a little less vulnerable. So you can talk about characters in movies or their friends, and it's a little bit easier for them to open up.
That's interesting, because my suspicion with one of my kids has been that he's maybe a little bit, I think he has some confidence issues.
Of course.
So maybe I've been thinking maybe he's worried what other people think about what his responses are going to be. So what you said was make it about someone else, not necessarily himself.
Right. Then they don't feel as vulnerable or self-conscious or like they're being judged. You can say, gosh, look at what that character is doing in that show. What do you think about that?
Nice. Oh, good. Now, is there a general rule that a parent can follow to help them avoid criticizing a child? Like, for instance, is there a generic alternative to criticism that gets the point across without causing the child to shut down or think you don't support them?
Absolutely. There's a few tips. One is to focus on the behavior and not the child, not their character themselves. So it's the difference between, I need you to pick up your room, versus you're a slob. And you want to use I statements rather than you statements. So I feel hurt and disrespected when you don't answer me, versus you are disrespectful and rude. You kind of hear what I mean with that?
Yeah.
So you want to avoid aggressive, negative, or hurtful words, especially name calling, and try to say 3 positive things for every criticism. So remember that positive reflection and affirmation is really important. It's just like with our bosses, we need to hear good things so that, you know, every time we hear from them, we're not bracing ourselves that it's going to be a criticism.
Right.
So a lot of affirmation and positive feedback is really important. And then also teaching empathy and the use of humor. So with my own girls who are 12 and 15, sometimes I might say something to them like, how would you feel if you took care of our dog Fifi all day and drove her around to play dates, got her favorite foods, and then she growled at you and bit you? And then they might roll their eyes and laugh. But I would say, you know, it would kind of suck, right?
Yeah.
It kind of helps them put themselves in your position and be able to empathize and imagine how someone else might feel.
How can a parent get their children to respect other people's cultures and ethnicities? And what role does What role do you think valuing diversity plays, if any, in raising a critical thinker?
Gosh, I think this is such an important issue, and diversity is always a strength. And valuing diversity means valuing different ways of thinking. By looking at different perspectives, we have a more comprehensive understanding of ourselves and the world around us. It really helps kids develop less rigidity and more open-mindedness and a greater capacity for creative and collaborative thinking. And you can do this by opening your children's eyes by providing them with exposure to diversity, whether that's across race or religious beliefs, sexual orientation, and socioeconomic differences. And you can do this through taking them to the museum, art exhibits, films, and cultural events, and even travel, pointing out cultures as you travel various places, or even in neighborhoods in Chicago. Increasing awareness of social issues can happen through other activities. I live in Evanston, and I love the Race Against Hate that happens every June, and it's a real opportunity for families to come together and talk about racism, which is something that sometimes people avoid talking about, and it's so important. So really developing those values as a family, involving them in classes and organizations that support and promote diversity, and really modeling openness and compassion and kindness in your own behavior and thinking and language at home. It's really important.
You know, and Chicago's such a great place to raise kids because they do get, you know, exposed to all different ethnicities and cultures. But some of our listeners may live in a place where they don't get that exposure. It may be mostly one race or ethnicity. So you gave some good examples there of how they can wow. You can experiment with films,
absolutely, festivals,
or, you know, like you said, museums. Yeah, those are good examples. Does providing a child with his or her own personal space and respecting it play a role in helping critical thinking flourish? And if so, what can parents whose children share a room do?
Space is important. It's a place for them to kind of decompress and reboot, especially if you have a kid who's a little bit more introverted. They may really need that time and space. And also, their own space is a place for them to reflect their own identity. So if they share a room, letting them put their own posters up or decorate their own half in the way that they want is important. My girl shared a room at one point, and just making sure that they each had time alone in the room, I think, is important. The younger one would go to bed earlier and get up earlier, so that kind of created space for them each to be alone, or maybe one would be at a friend's house and the other would enjoy the room that day. That type of thing, I think, is really important.
This is something that just popped in my head, and I don't know. Maybe it does affect a critical thinker or helping that flourish. I know that kids are going to develop faster, easier if with the less stress they have on their life. We're all going to have stress, but in on the same question, if you have two kids that are sharing a room with opposite personalities, one's a messy kid and one's very organized, and there's no way to fix the situation with separating them yet, is there anything you can do besides just making the kid who is just naturally a little more messy keep his room clean? Have you ran into anything like that before?
That's a really common struggle. And it's an opportunity for learning for both of them. And it'll prepare them for college and marriage and everything else. So,
well, that's a good way to look at it.
Right. Absolutely. People are different. And anytime you have to share space, you're going to have to compromise and learn. And so maybe it's an opportunity for the neater person to learn how to cut some slack to their sibling, or for the messier person to learn how to be neater. I have a messy kid who actually, she invited her friend over who helped her organize, and her friend, able to take that from her friend rather than from me or from her sister.
And, you know, actually, maybe it would even be a good idea to just have that talk that we just had with probably the neater one.
Yes.
Explain to him that this might actually, him or her, this might actually benefit you, you know, being around people that are different from you and you know, being able to handle it.
Learning resiliency and tolerance, absolutely.
Good. How big of an impact can a child's learning style, for instance, maybe they're creative or more logical, or they learn through music or spatially. There's so many different ways that kids learn. How big of an impact on their specific style of learning is that going to have on their ability to develop critical thinking? How can parents even figure out what their child's thought process or style is?
Absolutely. It's a great question. There are many learning style inventories that are available online. Mm-hmm. I really like one that's on Psychology Today. It's called the Multiple Intelligence and Learning Style Test. It's only $7, mm-hmm. and it's easy to complete. And that gives you some more information about how you yourself or how your child learns and maybe how that's different. Mm-hmm. And it's important to recognize that your child's learning style affects how they gather and process information and how they develop their opinions and make decisions. And parents, it's really important for us to remember to accept and embrace our child's unique learning style rather than trying to change it or perceiving our own or a different way as somehow better.
Which is a lot of the time our natural first response, but that's...
Yes.
Try to hold back from that, yeah.
Absolutely.
That's good. We all want to challenge our kids with more. We want to pile as much as we think they can handle, see how they respond. But it seems like to me anyway that kids these days, to me, it seems like they have so much more stress sources than I did growing up as a kid. And I'll give you an example, social media, the internet. I think that with my own kids, and especially my oldest, who's 14, freshman in high school, I think that he's really into YouTube. He
yes.
watches YouTube videos a lot. I think that he sees the very best of humanity or the very worst of humanity. There's nothing real on there, though.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Real life is boring sometimes. And, you know, seldom the reality of what life is or should be do they see on some of these platforms. How can parents avoid piling more on our kids with unrealistic expectations, or how do we avoid that, piling too much on?
It really is a cultural problem for all of us, for parents ourselves, and for our kids. You're absolutely right that it's a big problem. And parents need to keep their own expectations realistic and allow their kids some time and space to rest and reboot. And you mentioned technology. It is really important to unplug from technology and to create some rituals in your home. For example, at dinner time, we don't have our phones. Maybe when we're on vacation, we check our phones, for 30 minutes a day. But otherwise, we enjoy being unplugged and rebooting.
Okay.
And teaching them that leisure time is an important part of health and wellness, and that we all need work-life balance and self-care. So we want to set a healthy example for them. Talk to them about consciously not overscheduling. I laugh when my older daughter was 3. She said to me, "Mom, I'm 3. I only can do one thing a day," because I had taken her to preschool and then ballet class. And
Whoa.
She said she was stressed out. She's a little precocious.
Wow.
A therapist
okay.
child. But talking with them about how much is too much. And today she's involved in several sports. She's an orchestra. She's an honors student. She wants to see her friends. She could go 24/7 if I didn't set some boundaries around that. So I talked to her about the importance of rest and nutrition and just laying around the house and having some alone time. That's really an important part of having a balanced life.
It's funny. I'm getting my days mixed up. It was actually yesterday. I took my kids to Standstone. That's on Michigan Avenue. And that day, it was about 4 p.m., and I had realized that they're on spring break now, so they're with me. And they live in two parents. We co-parent. And I had realized I was trying to shove so much information into them that during this week that I have them, And my daughter actually said, "I cannot learn anything else today." And but it just reminded me of that.
She was saturated.
She was
trying to fit it all in during
And then
your time.
I promised that I wouldn't take any more opportunities to teach them anything else the rest of the day. And it wasn't 5 minutes later, I was trying to teach them something else.
We can't help ourselves sometimes.
What are some good ways to teach your child to trust their internal instincts?
Well, I think that it's important sometimes to get out of our heads and to connect with our bodies and our intuition. And one of the best ways to do that is to practice mindfulness practices, such as deep breathing, meditation, and yoga. And it might be hard to talk your teenager into practicing these things, but there are great apps like Calm and Headspace that are appealing to them.
Okay.
And to teach them that this is a way for them to get in touch with feelings that they're holding in their body. And encourage them to check in with their gut and their heart before making decisions and become aware of the feelings that they're holding in their body so that their responses are authentic and clear. You can use teachable moments about having conversations about different situations in life and again through movies and again inquiring how they would handle things. So having them check in with themselves and their own intuition and feelings about how they would instinctually handle different situations.
Interesting. And the, you know, meditation is, I've introduced my 14-year-old. Do you think that, you know, even as young as 12 would be, you think they could, you know, be introduced at that early of an age to meditation? And you think it's a good idea? And
I do. I think even as young as 5.
Okay.
Really, it's about paying attention to the breath.
Mm-hmm.
So the breath is what ties together the mind, the body, and the spirit, and it brings our attention to the present moment. So if they can work on deepening their breath, imagining that they're holding a candle in front of them and they want to breathe out so slowly that they're not going to blow out that candle, and working at deepening and slowing the breath, it helps them focus on the here and now and the present moment and get out of the mind chatter in their brain. My 12-year-old has a teacher who does meditation session at the end of every one of her classes, and my 12-year-old said that's the favorite part of her day.
Is that right? And that's going to help them even more with balancing all these stressors that we talked about earlier, the internet, social media, and just kind of recalibrate themselves.
Absolutely. And when you were talking about social media, I think it's important to remind our kids that we sometimes compare our insides to other people's outsides, and what's on people's profiles is not a whole complete representation of what is going on for them. And so we have to have compassion for ourselves and recognize that everybody else has their stuff. As human beings, we all deal with, whether it's self-esteem issues or stress or anxiety or depression or addiction or relationship issues, we're human beings and not human doings. And so it's time to kind of stop and reflect and take time for ourselves.
And I think it's so important what you just said. I think it's really important that parents remind their children that what they're seeing on Facebook or whatever it is they're using now, Snapchat,
Instagram,
it's not a perfect holistic picture of what that person's life is. It's only the best of what they want you to think it is. And so I think sometimes, you know, and kids growing up with it may think that, wow, my life's really boring. You know, this person so much better than me. Yeah, it's important to remind them that that's not a real picture of what's happening in their life. You know,
absolutely.
Real life, like I said, real life is, it can be boring at times. Real life is real. It's not what they see on social media necessarily.
Definitely.
How can mom or dad correct an opinion that they may think is misguided that their child's having? In other words, how can parents create an environment of trust in which their children know their opinions are welcome, even if the parent doesn't really agree with it?
Well, first, I think you really need to allow time and space for them to express their opinion without jumping in and kind of defensively correcting them. It's normal for us to worry and have some fear and concern and want to immediately say, but, and have you thought about this? And so it's important to just say, okay, you know, tell me about that. And, you know, what do you think about that? And where did that come from? And respond with neutrality and not judgment and encourage them to share. And sometimes as they start to hear themselves, they can learn through that process. But when kids don't feel heard, they end up upping the ante, and it ends up kind of fueling that belief system. So it's important to reflect that you understand their opinion, even if yours is different. And you want to create an atmosphere where open discussion is allowed and welcome. And ask questions that might help them see the other perspective. And I try to do this in kind of a non-threatening way, almost kind of playing dumb, like, well, what if this happens?
I see.
And let them figure it out rather than telling them that they're wrong.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Absolutely, it does. Sometimes, especially, I'm noticing with my 14-year-old that if the idea didn't come from within himself, he tends to push back against it.
Yes.
He doesn't want to be told what to do anymore. He's becoming a man, but he's still a boy, and it's that time that's so complicated.
It's the time of separation and individuation, and so they want to be autonomous, and they will dig their heels in, even if they're they know maybe they're wrong. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to let them have their own opinions and try to detach from fear or worry that what their belief systems are at 14 may not be what they are going to be at 30, and it's developmentally appropriate that for them to be a little ridiculous at this point.
Good point. new experiences, they can offer some great opportunities for our children to grow. What are some tools that a parent can employ instead of just saying, shh, don't talk about it, when a child notices a person of a different color or sexual orientation or someone who lives with a disability that they don't understand, that they haven't been, this is probably a younger child, but
yes,
it comes up. What are some tools that a parent can employ instead of just saying, you know, telling them, shutting them down and saying, don't talk about that?
Yes, it's important to talk about these things. Again, going back to teaching compassion and openness and welcoming of diversity. So again, being a positive role model for them, demonstrating kindness and compassion and cultural sensitivity in your own behaviors. And afterwards, have a conversation. For example, did you notice that person at Starbucks might have been transgendered? And what are your thoughts about that? Mm. Can you imagine what that might have been like for them? And how brave and how beautiful she looked. Mm-hmm. Or did you notice that woman was wearing a headscarf? My friend wears a hijab. I wonder, how much do you know about Islam? I've learned a lot from my friend.
I see.
Facilitating those types of conversations, how everyone is different and unique in their own way. And sometimes this is visible on the outside and sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's on the inside. And obviously highlighting people's positive characteristics. I recently went to my daughter's school performance and I commented on a girl that was in the wheelchair. She had never mentioned her before. And I said, oh, that girl was so joyous and so happy. She seemed like she was having a great time. And I said, do you know her? And Claudia said, yes, everyone loves her, which I thought was so sweet.
It is. That's great. And my kids seem so, I don't know. I mean, it may be this school they're at. I know certainly that their mother and I always teach them inclusiveness and understanding for other people what they're going through. But even the school is doing an excellent job because they see, for instance, when I was in school, you know, in 1980, let's say, when I was young, homosexuality was a totally different thing than it is now as far as in the realm of acceptance. It's not even an issue for my kids.
No.
There's a homosexual, you know, girl or boy in their class. It's not even an issue at all.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, it's totally
amazing.
And
the schools are so helpful in that. It really does take a village. Mm-hmm. And I think we grew up in an era where we put people in boxes, unfortunately, and that our kids are learning a much more fluid way of understanding people on continuums.
Yeah.
And that's important.
Yeah, very, very much so. How can we help our children understand and comprehend other people's emotions? And how important is that ability in this, you know, goal of attaining critical thinking in our kids?
I'm so glad you asked this, because I actually think that empathy is the most important life skill and relational skill. It's the ability to put yourself in somebody else's shoes and imagine how they might feel in any given situation. And this really promotes insight and awareness and compassion. It's so important to understand how other people might feel and to explore multiple perspectives. So again, helping them identify and label their own emotions is an important skill, so that, you know, instead of everything kind of going in the angry bucket, they can differentiate when they're feeling sad, when they're feeling frustrated, when they're feeling overwhelmed, and understanding the different range of feelings, and then being able to imagine how other people feel. I do this a lot when my kids are talking about their friend group dynamics. I'll say, gosh, you know, how do you imagine Nell felt in that situation? Or, you know, what do you think was going on for Lily? And it helps them take themselves out of their own position and imagine how that other person is feeling and responding.
You know, we get so wrapped up in being curious about how our kids feel that, yeah, that's easy. Even, you know, it's easy for me to forget to ask, how do you think that person felt? Really teaches them empathy. And I also think empathy is hugely important. Not, you know, for the human race.
Yes.
If everyone had empathy, it would solve a lot of problems.
We'd be a lot further along.
Yes. Wrapping it up, we covered a lot.
Yes.
And people can go back and listen to parts that they like. But I think let's wrap it up with giving them three ways a parent can enhance their chances of raising a critical thinker. One who, upon leaving for college, is ready to think outside the box, find new ways to interpret even the most accepted theoretical concepts.
Yes. I mean, the first one would be having those open and honest conversations with your kids, having dialogues and encouraging conversations about alternate possibilities and outcomes and opinions without fear of judgment or criticism. And secondly, providing education and exposure to different situations, whether it's what they're reading online or in other social settings, academics, athletics, hobbies, all of that exposure to different experiences and people, it's going to open up their world and their perspective. And then finally, I think it's really important to remind them that everything that they see online is not real and is not fact. So encouraging some healthy skepticism and some healthy questioning and looking into research and further exploration of ideas before accepting them verbatim.
Good stuff. I think it's going to help a lot of people. Joyce Martyr, founder, CEO at Urban Balance. Where can people find you again?
UrbanBalance.com or Joyce-Martyr, M-A-R-T-E-R.com.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Vic.